No man has ever died from bending his knee. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in the second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinoza. That quote is from
no, I was about to say, like, it sounds witty and very poignant. Like, you'd think it's from a Tyrell box, so like my heart instantly goes to like a Queen of Thorns quote or a Margaery quote, even like a Cersei. Nah, it's too gentle for Cersei, but like it has this sort of wit about it that I go to some of the more intriguing characters from the series. But that is right.
Some of the folks that are like willing to bend when the time is convenient, you know, rather than break, or folks that understand expedient mercy, you know, I can see Tywin telling that to one of his enemies, you know, as a kind of bend the knee now or else, or like you said, the Queen of Thorns, you know, kind of saying, hey, we saw which way the wind was blowing. We bent the knee. What of it? But no, it is nobody like that. It is the series possibly most contrarian ruler, Balon Greyjoy. It seems really weird. As someone who seems to really despise the concept of bending the knee, I'm not really sure. You know, I need to be reminded of the full passage that comes from, probably.
Yeah, out of context, this is a super uncharacteristic quote from the dude whose thought would be, like, let's just hit the nuclear button all the time.
Yeah. Like, oh, someone's looking the other direction? Quick, let's try to rebel.
Yeah. Too bad he gets thrown off a bridge.
Whoa, spoilers!
Whoop. That's book. Nah, never mind. It's later than I think it is. In my mind, it was really early.
You'll say it.
I suppose it's not.
It's gotta be at least late book two, but I bet you it's late book three.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Whoops. It's definitely before book four.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Welcome back to a podcast about Game of Thrones that has not been introduced nor have the hosts in almost 3 minutes. We're really killing it at intros lately, aren't we?
What isn't there is a Gen Con? There's somewhere where to qualify for your press badge, you have to announce yourself in the first 90 seconds or something.
Yeah, it was. I forget what the time limit was, but I remember it was something like that. Because Daryl was real worried about it the first year he applied for a press badge.
Hilarious.
So, here we go. We're a little late, but this is The White Book, episode 312. I'm Will, also known as Kenneth. And who do I have co-hosting with me this week?
I was like, you're the what did Roy call us all? Midwestern whales? Because none of us have metas.
Whale?
and we're just like these big whales floating through a sea of nothingness. I forget what I think was how it went. I forget why we were whales, but I remember him very distinctly saying Midwestern males, because there's all these good players scattered to the four winds of flyover country.
Nice. Okay, we'll tell you what, everybody now is going to have to pick a different kind of whale. I call dibs on narwhal.
I'll take orca. I like, they're pretty.
Good choice. Good choice. You know, plus the colloquial term of killer whale's pretty bad.
Very true. That's only at the table. Like, I'm a orca on the street, but this is getting weird.
But a killer whale in the sheet.
Yeah, but we're gonna pull up now. We've dove too deep.
2D. You know, I didn't think that was normally a problem for whales, but oh well. We still have to breathe, I suppose.
Well, that went to a weird place. Balin Greyjoy and whales.
You know, it's all nautical themed. It's all in the family.
True.
Right?
I've never actually heard them mention whales in Thrones. I'll have to go back and see if any of the seafaring folk ever mention the other than the Kraken, I don't know of any sea life that gets mentioned. Oysters, I think Arya runs into oysters, but that might be it.
Yeah. There's probably some generic mention of just fish. I don't remember any whale mentions for sure. I wonder if they are mentioned, if they're not called whales. What is it? Crocodiles are called in Westeros. Lizard lions, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard that. I remember that somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, they talk about them infesting the neck, if I remember properly.
Maybe that's what I make if I ever get a champ card. Some, like, bullshit Greyjoy non-unique, and it's like sea cow hunter.
There's a lot of manatees there. They're kind of overpopulated, so the Greyjoys have to keep them in check.
Yes, just be a good dude with a harpoon, very like Moby Dick-esque.
I love it.
And I'll tell the artist description.
Captain Ahab.
Yes,
going after the sea cow that got away from him.
Only better, I'll tell the artist that I want my likeness in the whale, not in the character. Like, you just work my face into this whale. That would be cool. Just let it be.
Well, now I'm super confused. Are we talking sea cows or whales?
Yes.
Or manatees? Or
I don't know.
I'm so lost.
Generic nautical creature.
Because sea cows are a thing. It's the same thing as a manatee.
I know, I suppose. Dang it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm out. Have a good episode.
On that depressing note, I guess I'm doing this review by myself. I think that would be a first. I don't think I've ever tackled a review completely by myself before.
What is the sound of one hand clapping, Will? That's what that would be.
I don't know, but I do know who knows. Jaime Lannister.
Oh, that's good though.
Yeah. Well, and if that isn't a good segue to a review, I don't know what is. Hint to the listeners: after all this time, I still don't know what is. Still don't know.
One day we'll figure it out.
Okay, so this week, Kyle's going to help me with the first portion of our House of Thorns review. I'm pretty freaking pumped about a lot of cards in this particular box. I've got it here in front of me, and my lovely wife was kind enough to pick it up for me. So I've got some physical cards that I'm flipping through. And in chatting with Kyle, he suggested that we we change it up a little this week and this time. Of course, with the number of cards we've got in a box, we're going to have to split it into two pieces. So Kyle actually suggested we do all of the non-Tyrell stuff this week. I think it's all part of his devious scheme to keep me from talking about all the cards that I'm actually excited about. But, oh well.
Womp womp. Let's
see what we can do. Yep. Okay, so you've got those in front of you, right, Kyle?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. For listeners who may be a little less familiar with the system, we are going to give these an A through F rating, similar to the American grading scale. A, of course, is the best, and F is the worst. Though we have, as time has gone, added a couple extra ratings. We've added the S tier, which is a reference to fighting game reviewers and such, like Street Fighter and so on. And that is really, really the tip-top primo edge of the curve. Like, hey, maybe this probably should not have been printed. And we've also added the E tier, which comes in right above the F for fail. And that is the super niche sideboard silver bullet card. Like, oh, hey, if this one thing is ever just a rampant problem in the meta, then this is going to be a lifesaver. But otherwise, no one will ever touch it. So we wanted to leave ourselves an out for that. Although we've also used that, I think, for a couple combo cards that will need some very specific circumstances to work. So E is quite specific.
Quite.
There we go. So, Kyle, you've got these in front of you. You want to lead us off with our first non-Tyrell card, which I believe should be River Runner.
I believe you're only doing this because you only half believe I have these pulled up.
Exactly.
But I will have you know I am 70% more prepared than I usually am, and I am ready to go.
That's actually pretty hefty. Like, that is 70% more prepared than normal is almost like 65% prepared. So
sad, so true. Alrighty. So first up, we have a bear character, River Runner. Cost 3, military power, 3 strength, non-unique, non-loyal, ally smuggler. And while River Runner is attacking, each character with power, cannot be declared as a defender. So an offensive card that has a kind of neat ability.
Yeah, kind of a pseudo stealth. I mean, I don't get to choose who it dodges, but a lot of the characters that it does dodge are the sort of people I don't want in the challenge anyway. You know, it's getting around your Tywins and your Knight of Flowers and so on. And those are folks I don't want defending.
That is true. I think I would have been more happy with seeing this as participating instead of attacking. I think that would have been a niftier, even if it was 4 for 3 to play both sides.
I don't know how that would work. How would he work on defense? I feel like you'd have to have a much more powerful ability.
You change
because it just says they can't be declared as defense.
You change it to like don't count their strength or remove them from the challenge or something. Like
don't count their strength. That's pretty big.
Sure, but it's like it just being an offensive character out of Bera seems. I mean, maybe this is different. Maybe smugglers will finally be a thing, and they're going to be an offensive Bera mechanic.
I think that would be good to have. They lean pretty hard on some of that defensive stall stuff right now.
Yes, so it would be a new direction for them, which I'd be fine with. But it's tough because, I mean, he's 3 strength, so now you're in a situation, like you said, where you can't use your beefy guys because they have power on them, hopefully. And your weaker guys are at an equal or lower strength. So yeah, he kind of hits you. If you're not if you don't have a mid-range character on the board, he can push through a challenge you otherwise probably wouldn't win. But I don't know if the situations where he can capitalize on his ability come up enough to warrant running him at this point.
Possibly in Joust. I do think he's going to be an interesting tool for Baratheon in Melee. Now, I don't want to delve too far down this particular avenue. We can talk about it during props and slops, but with the restricted list reining in a good bit of the non-character power grab, it's going to behoove people even more to be running all the renowned characters they can in Melee, which I think is going to mean the River Runner is going to be able to snipe through some unopposed challenges on people. So I dig that, and Bear could use a little leg up in Melee, so I hope that pans out.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. If you had a location that came along that was like all smugglers gain stealth, let's say, I think this guy suddenly is super duper good. Because you just...
Agreed.
I mean, so I think, like I said, if smuggler synergy ever becomes a thing, I think he could be a very key piece in that 3-cost slot for that deck. But as he stands now, he's more of a C character to me.
Yeah, I think in the end a C is what I think of. You know, he's still pretty reasonable cost to strength, icons and such, and an interesting ability, but he's nothing really to write home about yet. All right. You want to give me a bend the knee?
Sure.
We'll just both do the houses, like do both cards for each house as we go.
Sure, that works for me. All right. Sure. So Baron number 2 is again a non-unique, non-loyal. I believe everything in here is non-loyal.
I think that's kind of been the theme with the boxes. Haven't all of the off-faction cards in the other boxes all been non-loyal?
I believe so. I'm sure there's like a corner case that we're forgetting, but... So can you continue that trend? We have another non-loyal card. Like Will said, this one's Bend the Knee. 1 cost, but you can only play if you control a standing king character. And then action, choose a kneel, a lord, or lady. Hitting lords and ladies is good because I feel 9 times out of 10 that's who you're going to want to be kneeling. So 1 gold to kneel a dude is great. Having that standing king to play it makes me very nervous. It would take at least 6 king cards, maybe 9, for me to feel really good about running this, or some BA search where you know you can go get a king on the fly.
You know, like Tinder Marge?
Yes, that would be good. So, but running a weird Tyrell to Stag Neil deck seems... I'd have to go look and see how much non-loyal Neil there is. But, I mean, that could be...
Almost all of it.
That could be...
Weirdly, almost all of it is non-loyal.
So maybe a False Banner Tyrell... thing might be a thing.
It would be different. It'd be interesting. That maybe there's some kind of control deck there that leverages all of the deal it can get its hands on, plus the Tyrell draw and gold. I don't know. It might be worth taking a look at.
Well, there's a poke. Which I mean is good, because that's kind of the concept, right? So these cards are non-loyal, so maybe there is a clever way to work them in to your Tyrell decks. So
Right. That's obviously what they're going for.
Yo.
So Bend the Knee in general, I'm glad that they are still finding ways to give us some Neil out of Baratheon. But I think you're right that the number of kings available kind of gives me some pause. Jeez, maybe it really forces me to lean on the crown attachments. I'm intrigued, but I don't think it's great. So I think maybe I just give Ben the Knee a C as well.
I was in the C- range. I mean, unless we got like a dual house Joffrey or Tommen, or, you know, some like a cheap king besides just Bob. Until that situation arises, I just don't think I can be convinced to run this card.
Well, I guess that's what the attachments are for. If you want a cheap king, you know, make somebody a boy king and run with it.
I suppose so. Is that terminal?
You know, that's a great question. I do not recall. Let's hit up ThronesDB and find out.
If it's not, I mean, maybe. But it still makes me a touch nervous.
Boy King is not.
So yeah, if it's not terminal, maybe. But now you're dedicating, what, 3 slots to Bob and 3 attachments just to make something a king.
Right.
To trigger one event.
Yeah, and it has to go on a lord. Boy King does, if you're going that way. But I mean, the crowns are all virtually the same, so.
Yeah.
So in that regard, as far as making people kings.
Yeah, we need another king before I think that card becomes good. But if we get kings or a neutral, I don't know if they would ever make a manse that actually gave him the king trait, but does he ever? Because he called himself the king of the wildlings,
right? He does have the king trait. The current one does.
So maybe that's enough. Maybe manse plus him is enough, especially with manse. No, never mind. I back off.
All right.
I don't know what rabbit hole is going down, but it was a dumb one.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I think we're going to head too far down that rabbit hole, and we've got a lot more cards to cover. So how about I kick us over to the Greyjoys? We have Drowned God's Apostle. This is a 4-cost, 3-strength non-loyal. It has intrigue and power icons. It has the Drowned God and Ironborn traits, and the reaction, after you win dominance, kill Drowned God's Apostle to put a non-unique Greyjoy character with printing cost 3 or lower into play from your dead pile. That's a little weird and convoluted. It's obviously kind of some combo pieces. And it's basically just to try to get... what's the other Drowned God guy that gains power after you return someone? Gosh. No. Does he not have the Drowned God trait? I just tried to search that in ThronesDB and did not turn him up. Wasn't there one that gains power? Is that an upcoming card?
Shoot, I don't remember. But yeah, I was trying to think, looking at this, like, is this ability, like, what can you be running that turns killing this 4-cost non-unique with solid icons, especially for Greyjoy, into a different dude? Like, why? Where is that going to be an upgrade? I'm trying to think of 3-cost non-uniques that would be worth going to get, but I mean, other than maybe, like, is Newly Made Lord put into play, or is it play?
Newly Made Lord is 4-cost, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I really just think this is way too limited right now. Without some real shenanigans that are doing a bunch every time you return a character to play, or I was about to say sacrifice, but you don't actually sacrifice the Drowned God's Disciple. You do kill it, so I'm just really not feeling this.
Guess is he will end up being played more for his traits than for his ability.
Yeah, and possibly that.
The Ironborn, we'll see the intrigue icon for sure, and then either Drowned God or Ironborn synergy is why he'll get played. Because 4-for-3 intrigue pow is a nice filler for Greyjoy, and he has good traits.
Yeah, ooh, sounds like you're probably more up on him than me. I'm honestly probably only giving him about a D.
Maybe I'll say D plus. I'll give him D plus.
Okay.
With room to grow. Arrow is pointed up.
Yeah. I hope. Okay, so our next one definitely intrigues me a little bit more. Kug, because this is kind of the redo of the first edition card that had some interesting stuff. So this is Corpse Lake. This is a 2-cost unique Greyjoy location. It has the Iron Islands trait and reaction. After a character is discarded from an opponent's deck, Corpse Lake gains 1 power. Limit 3 times per round. So, I mean, here's how you make those pillage decks actually win, huh? You get out there and discard enough characters that you can hopefully win the game off of it. Granted, most decks are running about 30 characters, give or take. So you're gonna need to hit a lot. You know, you're hitting roughly half the time in your average deck to get this. I don't know. You're going to need some extra shenanigans. But
if you pillage, by that math, if you pillage 16 cards, you get, which I don't think is a crazy number for a deck dedicated to it, that's estimated eight power a game just off a location, plus whatever normal stuff you're doing.
Right. It just bugs me a little bit, I think, to see them shift the discard, like, pillage win to a power win when they added the decking lose condition to the game. It's kind of like, I don't know, there's been a shift here in perspective. Kind of like they added that penalty early, and now they're kind of backpedaling, like, we don't really want people to win the game that way. Here, instead, win it with power.
But this is could also be a good plan B. Like, if I'm going into a mill deck, this, to me, encourages you to maybe roll the dice on that, because you're like, okay, I know I can consistently mill 40 cards, but then they tend to win. Now, if that's the deck you have, you look at this and go, if I mill 40 cards, odds are good I'll get my 15 power. You know? Like, I think this is a good plan B for those decks.
Here's the important question. Can I win a melee game now with Corpse Lake and the Reader?
That's 2 cards? Probably not, because that's not legal. But
probably not. But I am kind of tempted to try that out. If I can win at least 1 unopposed challenge with a unique Greyjoy, then I can trigger the Reader to discard the top 3 from each opponent's deck. 12 cards? Surely there's 3 characters somewhere in there, right? And then I've maxed out Corpse Lake for the turn. It sounds pretty good. Now that I'm going to have to change up some of my power gaining mechanics in Melee, that might be worth looking at.
This card was a force in first ed Melee, and I think it'll be a force in second ed Melee. The only thing I don't like about it is right now, this isn't passive per se, but relatively passive power gain is prevalent and annoying. So Greyjoy getting in on the fun seems just like good, here's another way that a location's going to sit there and get the power.
I guess people are going to have to start playing New the Made Lord in Melee.
Oh, man. Making friends one Lord at a time.
Yep. Well, here, tell you what. Did we actually rate Corpse Lake? I don't think so.
It's a B plus kind of card.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm pretty high on it. I think I'd give it a B plus as well. All right, you want to throw the Lannister cards on us? I figure you'll be pretty excited about those.
Best house in the game, so yeah, we should talk about them. We have a new Hound, Lannister, not unique. But non-loyal, 4 cost, 4 strength, military POW, and House Clegane and Kingsguard, no attachment but weapons, all good things so far. And reaction, after he enters play, choose a knight character without attachments and return it to its owner's hand. And for fun, the flavor text on this reads, I am no knight, I spit on them and their vows, which may be the second most badass thing I've heard the Hound say.
Oh, like, man. What was number 1?
The Oh man, I can't. I'm gonna fudge it up. The thing about the chickens from the show when he's like, "I'm gonna eat all the motherfucking chickens."
Oh yeah, good times. Good times.
Good times. But I think this is good, and I hate saying this, and I hate doing this to Cards. The worst thing going for this is that he's named the Hound, because the other one's really good.
Yeah, he's up against some really stiff competition.
And I don't know of any knights right now that I'm terrified of where I want to run this one instead. I mean, there are plenty of good knights in this box, so maybe if Tyrell goes bananas and I know I have to deal with it and it's a tough matchup, I would use this guy. But that's tough. That's real tough right now. Maybe there'll be Kingsguard synergy. I keep leaning on traits and being like, maybe the trait will make it good. But if he wasn't called the Hound, if he was just Bob the Knight, I think I run him a 1x of in a lot of landing decks. But it's tough when it's the Hound.
Yeah, it is tough. But he's got that... he's got a huge tempo advantage there. Just straight up return to hand. You know, they can't have attachments, but they could have a lot of power, which I think is pretty big. This is another card, and I'm kind of noticing a theme here that I keep looking at and saying, you know, this has some potential application in Joust, but I think it's really going to shine in Melee. You know, you don't really, in general, see the other Hound in Melee, so you can kind of free up that slot, and a lot of those knights have some tasty looking renown, you know, your Jamies, your Knight of Flowers and stuff, and suddenly now the Hound is a real big play to mess with someone else's board, slow down their power total, and still get a body yourself. So
it could be big, and I think if Tyrell owns your meta, sure. But the other downside there is that it says without attachments. That part seems rough, especially because Tyrell, who has most of the good knights, loves attachments and gets a couple in this box. You know, So it's like the moment you're like, oh man, I'm going to knock out this Renly. Whoops. Now there's a bodyguard or there's a whatever on him, and suddenly he's immune. So that part makes me nervous.
Yeah. So, gosh, I feel like this is a really tough one to rate. Gosh, it's still just so potent if you can just completely balance a body. Get that gold investment plus any other power that may be on there. Oh gosh, I'm gonna go with B minus. I'm gonna give this Hound a B minus.
I can imagine the moments you think of, and it's like, oh yeah, they blow all six gold and they put out a Knight of Flowers and, you know, like all this stuff. And then you're like, and then I go second, and I play him, and I bounce it. It's this big, huge swing. And that moment can win you games. I just worry that you won't have those moments as much as you want.
Yeah. I just wish he didn't have that no attachments restriction. So when my opponent knights their Balin, then I can be like, ha, thanks for setting up my Hound. But that doesn't work.
Nope. And that's the thing that sucks, is bodyguards are real big right now. Like I said, Tyrell has a ton of positive attachments that likes to run. Not a ton, but several positive attachments it likes to run. It just makes it tough to justify him right now. But like I said, if Tyrell's huge in your meta, and you're like, I just want to deal with these mofos, maybe you run him just as a silver bullet against those decks.
Okay, well then, what's our next Lannister card?
Speaking of attachments that go on knights, we get a unique attachment, Lion's Tooth. Lannister character, one cost, unique Lannister character only. Also has Ambush 2, typical theme we notice. Attached character gets +1 strength. So far we have a Widow's Wail. But action, during a challenge in which attached character is participating, sacrifice Lion's Tooth to choose a participating character with printing cost 3 or lower and return it to its owner's hand. And I like that part a lot, because it essentially eliminates chump blocking. If you're running Reigns or any kind of event where you need to win by blank, you can either ambush a sin or just stick it on to impose your will.
Yeah.
And I think this can win you a lot of challenges.
I think it's really cool. I just look at it and see, I mean, on the one hand, I guess I still like to look at the potential tempo swing here. Lannister's getting a lot more bounce in general than I really expected to see in the game, because it can add up so quickly. But I love that I could conceivably target my own characters with this and, you know, send my queen's assassin back to hand, ambush it in, make them kill, straight up kill something, things like that. So I think Lion's Tooth is pretty sweet, actually.
I like it. And I don't even know, like I was saying, how often I'm going to ambush this. I think if you just, like, stick this on, like, a bigger dude or anyone with stealth per se, and it's like, hey, I'm a stealth pastor big guy, so go ahead and chump block if you want, because I'm sending that stuff back and I'm still going to get unopposed. So, like, I think it creates a lot of problems when your opponent's working through how the challenge phase is going to flow when you can muck up any of those kind of blocks.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of mucking up between strength and bounce. Ugh.
Like, can you imagine this on a Jamie? It's like, hey, I've got five strength coming at you for military. You can chump block, but it's going to be unopposed, and I'm going to send him back. So now you're killing a better dude than your chump. So what you going to do? I mean, this all but forces them to either overcommit to defending a challenge in which you have a non-kneeler, which was already a good situation to be in for Lannister, but now it makes that him even more effective than he previously would be. I just think there's a lot of cool, good uses for him out of stuff you typically run.
Agreed. So what kind of rating would you give this then?
I'm going to say B+, fringe A-. I want to get some playtime with it to see if it's that good, but I think it's going to replace Widow's Wail, which I already run one of in almost every deck. So, I mean, when I think about it that way, I think of it as it's probably almost an auto-include. Yeah, I think A- B+ is a good place to put it.
Yeah, I think I would probably go with B+ in the end. Geez, I don't know, maybe A-. I mean, it can't be canceled by a hand's judgment, which is pretty rad. You know, treachery is the only thing out there canceling this right now. Which makes this more reliable than some of the events. I might have just talked myself into going up to an A-, actually.
Yeah, I like, yeah, the fact that it's tough to, there's one card in the game that cancels it. I think it's a good play. Anytime you can bounce weenies, it makes or characters in general, like if that's the character they're saving to protect themselves from Marched. You know, the more I think about it, the more the situations where I love this card grows. And anytime I feel that sensation happening, it's usually because a card that is versatile and powerful and I want to be running.
Oh man. Now I'm kind of excited to give Leonie another try again. Not that I've been disappointed in Lannister lately. I just, you know, been hearing the siren song of a certain greener, rosier house.
I don't know why. Lannister's best house in the game.
Yeah, still are. Good man. I assume you're going to be representing at Iowa Worlds.
I've changed 3 cards since Gen Con.
Nice.
And 2 of them were econ cards. And a plot. I know
which ones those were.
Yeah. Gold Road's really cool.
Okay, so is it on to me with the Martell cards then?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. First up, we have the Bastard of God's Grace. This is a unique Martell character. He's 5 cost with 4 strength. Oh, he is non-loyal, as we said. He has military and intrigue icons. He has the Bastard and Knight traits. He has renown. And the challenge's action, discard 1 power from the Bastard of God's Grace to reduce the cost of the next card you play or ambush this phase by 2. This is phenomenal. I think this is an amazing card for Martell. Even if he did not have any of that action text, if he was just this body with those traits and renown, I would be sorely tempted to play at least 1 copy of him in every Martell deck, just because that's a niche they need pretty badly to stay on top of the current metagame. But this ability, the mind fuckery. I'm gonna go ahead and pull out one of those words we try not to use these days on the show. That he allows, even on top of just straight up, you know, discarding a couple power and dropping Hota in for 1. Like your opponent just has to assume that any event that you possibly might have in hand can be played, basically. Like, once he has 1 power available on him, you know, what are you going to play that you couldn't afford with a -2 reduction? And that's even if you're sitting on no gold.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal character. I think we talked him up a lot last week.
I think so.
When he was spoiled. And he's just as great as he was 7 days ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I probably should like just said, keep repeating that stuff, huh?
I mean, like you said, it's all awesome. It's all powerful. The fact that to either keep a power and the bluff, it is a super good above the X's and O's kind of card. I think it's great.
Okay, well, I think I give him... He's definitely an A. He may actually even be A plus. I don't know. I'm gonna go A. I'm gonna be a little conservative.
Yeah, I'll say an A for sure. But he makes it a tough game for your opponent when he's out. That's for sure. Even if you don't have it, you can fake it, and you come off real dangerous while you're in a corner.
Oh yeah, yeah. Your opponent can't try to throw. Super important 2 claim military challenge at you or something, because you're essentially always bluffing that you might have the crud. What's it called in this edition of the game? Vengeance for Ilya? Yeah, there we go. So.
Always got it. 1 card in hand, that's what it is.
Okay, well what else did Martell get this pack? They also got, or this pack, gosh, this box. They also got the unique location Hellhold. This is 2 cost, and it has the Dorn, House Uller, and Stronghold traits, and has the reaction, after you lose a challenge by 5 or more strength, Hellhold gains 1 power. Well, back to my broken record of, I could see some good use for this in Joust, but it's going to be really awesome in Melee. I mean, that many more challenges that you could lose. I like seeing Martell get some more tools to be in that position where, I've got my lockdown on the game, and anything you do to try to stop me actually pushes me further. Now, that might be bad for the game as a whole, but as someone who definitely enjoyed Martell is their secondary house in first edition. I personally like playing that kind of thing.
Martell wants this, craves this. You put this in, what is it, the bone way next to it? I mean, it just speeds up the passive power stall deck so much. And maybe there's a weird thing here. Like, I keep trying to incorporate Tyrell since that's the box, where you pump your opponent's characters up.
Yeah, that's possible.
So you chump challenge for one, pump their dude to six, claim power? I don't know. I'm just, I'm grasping at straws to tie this in. But, no, it's a phenomenal card. This is definitely an A. I'm going to really hate it when my opponent plays this because it's really frustrating.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't keep going too far on this one either since we had talked about it some previously. But, yeah, I'm right there with giving it an A as well. And I'm hoping listeners side with me on this. I seem to remember way back in the day when we reviewed the Bone Way, I was pretty up on it and my co-hosts were pretty down. And I think we all know how that turned out, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Was I on for that? I probably was.
Maybe.
I probably was like, yeah, it sucks.
I don't remember.
I'll go back and find it. All right, I get my, I get the good old Night's Watch, though I will say, honorable mention, I think Martell is the most improved house coming out of this box, for sure. With two cards, most improved house, over Tyrell even, calling it now.
Yep.
So in Night's Watch, we get Small Paul, unique, non-loyal, 5-cost, military intrigue, 5-strength. And he is a steward. And gets no attachments except for weapons. And interrupt, when Small Paul is killed, search the top X cards of your deck for any number of steward characters, reveal them, add them to your hand, X is your reserve value, and shuffle your deck. Neat ability. Anytime you get good things for when a dude dies, that's solid, especially in a meta that sees, at least up here, a lot of valor. To get a hand refill off of it is very solid. 5 is a little cashy for a dude who doesn't do a lot other than be big when he's on the board. But I could get behind, if someone stuck this in, I could get behind the thought process.
Yeah, a 1x in decks that are steward heavy. Though I do just want to throw out, I find it a little weird that he is a steward, because isn't Small Paul one of the... No, he's not. Was he in the intro? No. That was just Will and the other guy, right? Small Paul was with them at the Fist of the First Men. That's what I'm thinking of. So he could have potentially been a steward, but he was probably more likely a ranger, right?
Let's not think too hard about being accurate to the books. We needed a steward. He just stewarded
things.
That's fair.
So he's pseudo-loyal thanks to that steward stuff. You need to be pretty in on stewards, I think, for him to be worthwhile. He's a mediocre to okay body. I think I probably... Gosh, the way Night's Watch is right now, I just don't know that he really has a home, though. You know, they don't have that problem defending something like an intrigue like they used to. And I don't think stewards are really tearing it up in any of the builds that I've been looking at her for. So I actually think Small Paul's like a C minus.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. Is right now, I just don't see him having a home in most decks. C minus it is.
Okay, Kyle, you want to lay that next Night's Watch card on us then?
Sure. We get a non-unique event, Broken Vows, 1-cost marshaling action. Give control of a Night's Watch character you control to an opponent. Then take control of a non-loyal character that player controls with a lower printed cost. So you can give that Small Paul to your opponent and take good things.
Take their yawn.
And they don't get to look for stewards, so that's cool.
Yeah. Can we just kind of agree that this is pretty terrible?
It's one too many restrictions too far.
Yeah. There's going to be, like, two games ever where you can just straight up win a game by taking enough power on the character that you steal. But I don't think that's enough to actually include this in a deck. You know, unless maybe Melee. Maybe.
I mean, if it was equal or lower cost, again, maybe. If it was just any character, maybe. But it's brutal that you, especially on a Nice Watch, which thrives yeah. on weenies, it's tough to be like, oh yeah, I'm just going to give you... So what bomb characters are you going to give up to try and steal a 5-cost non-loyal?
Yeah, got, I'm what, playing John Ninth Watch. And... I'm going to give away my Jon Snow to take your Knight of Flowers?
Unless he's got 8 power on him, I don't see why you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's tough. Yeah. I want to like this really bad. I just don't.
Yeah. I'm going out there. I'm going to go ahead and give it an F.
Ooh.
I just don't. Yeah. I just don't think it's good. All right. Does that send me over to Stark?
Yep.
All right. We've got Sir Dantos Hollard. 3-cost, 2-strength, military icon. He is, of course, he's a fool and a knight. Has no attachments except weapon. And interrupt when a lady character would be killed or discarded from play. Stand Sir Dantos Hollard to save that character. Well, I guess we got another one of to throw in the old Ladies' Knight deck. The Stark Tyrell stuff. I see that connection for sure. And especially if I'm in that pairing, I can see myself wanting to run a copy of him. I've got a lot of ladies running around. But I don't know that there's too many others. I mean, maybe if I'm doing Lannister, Banner, Wolf, I want to save Cersei. Or maybe if I'm doing Lannister, Targaryen, Banner, Wolf, maybe I want to save Dany. But I don't feel like those particular combinations are strong combinations. I think he's mostly got this one home where there's a critical mass to make him worthwhile.
I don't even know. I mean, if you just have some ladies, yeah, he's a solid 1-cost, because if he's out and you have a lady, he essentially turns into your own Aemon, right? Because how often is a lady going to die in a situation where you haven't had the chance for him to participate in a military challenge? Because even if you chuck block with him, chuck yeah. stand him, like, that's solid. Right?
Yeah. I think that's reasonable. You deprive them and unopposed. You kind of save yourself the claim. Yeah.
So I think he's like a D+ kind of card. I could see one ups in half of Stark decks. But yeah, unless you've got a bunch of ladies, you're not going to be able to leverage that ability very well. And now you're just paying 3 costs for a monocon who's going to jump block for a turn and then die. But he is a unique Stark, so him dying could be good. That's your thing.
Yeah, that could be good. I don't know. I suppose you did get me thinking more about just the main house Stark stuff. I guess you've got Arya, Sansa, and Kat that all see play in one of their forms or another. So... I mean, that's something. I think I might be willing to give him like a gosh. Maybe a D+? I don't know. The chump blocking thing on the military where someone's gonna die actually has me wanting to be a little more lenient to him and maybe go into a C- range.
Yeah, I'm in that deep. I'm in like a solid D plus.
Okay.
But could be good if you build, if your deck's built right and you notice you have a bunch, or not built right, but built in such a way that you notice you have a bunch of ladies. He's a really solid three clock. Like if you're looking for a chuds to round out your curve, I think he's a really good way to go.
Agreed.
Especially since most of those ladies are low on military icons, so.
Yeah, everyone except Arya.
And Brienne,
I guess. And Brienne. Okay. Next up, we have Last Hearth. This is a unique Stark location. For one, House Umber and the North Traits. In action, kneel Last Hearth to give a participating Stark character +2 strength until the end of the challenge. +3 strength instead if there are fewer than 3 plot cards in your used file. You know, I actually kind of like this. I think a reusable one cost strength pump like this is pretty solid. A 2 strength swing. I've really noticed thanks to Renly's Pavilion is nothing to sneeze at. Obviously, this has a little bit less application than the Pavilion does, but this is also cheaper and maybe gives a stronger strength boost early, which is an interesting little medley nod for Stark, I guess. They're stronger before the series really gets rolling, and then it's all downhill from there. So I think I would play 1x of this in a lot of Stark decks.
Yeah, and I could even see... I think it's super solid. I think it's a nice card. Like you said, constantly being able to bluff 2 more strength to push things to win by 5 if you're super aggro-y. If you're doing like a weird Stark Reigns deck to push that to 5. I think there's just a lot of moments where that 2 strength... I mean, it also takes your... Chud challenges, Chud blockers, or chump attacks, and turns them into real meaty challenges. So even if I think it can really impact the challenge game if used well, I think it's a super solid card. I'm gonna give it a B minus.
I think I may be even higher on it than that. I think I'm willing to give it a B plus.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a good one. All right, I think that sends you over to Targaryen.
Targaryen, the Dragonfolk. So first up, we get a new Blood Rider, Kotho. Am I saying that right? We'll say I am. Unique, non-loyal, 5 strength or 5 cost, 5 strength, military intrigue. He's a Blood Rider and a Dothraki, and has the action. Discard 2 Targaryen cards from your hand to put him into play from your hand. I think we discussed this guy last week as well. I'm a little nervous about all the cards that Target presumably has to discard. I like the discard to do cool things, but there's only so much fuel you have coming in to burn on cards.
Yeah, and they don't have a lot of ways to get that extra fuel.
Nope. Maybe if you banner to Tyrell for some draw?
I don't know why I play Kotho in that deck, though.
Yeah, I don't either. Ah, well, he might be good, but Targ's gonna need some draw mechanic to get him and that mechanic up and running. To the point where you can shrug off 2 Targ cards. Not even 2 cards, 2 Targ cards to throw him in. But if you can, 2 cards for free.
I mean, there's going to be situations. I can definitely foresee situations where I'm going to feel that's worthwhile. But it's a steep price.
Yep. So he's a D plus kind of card in my book.
Yeah, I think that's worthwhile. Depending on what kind of other Blood Rider tech that we get, that might edge upward a little bit. I'm gonna keep my eyes peeled on that for sure, and kind of see what happens.
All right, and next up is another card that we've spoiled. Tokar, a one-cost, non-unique attachment that only goes on target characters, and that character gets plus one strength for each attachment it has. And while attached characters participating in a challenge, each character without attachments cannot gain power. And this will be cool in Voltron decks, where you want to throw a million attachments on someone and have them go rampaging around the town, but short of that, this will see zero play. So this is, I guess, maybe an E card, maybe just a flat-out D-minus card, I don't know.
You know, I'm not thinking it's an E yet. You know, unless we really saw Maesters maybe getting some of that first edition tech that made this type of ability so potent in first edition. But I don't see that existing yet. And then that makes me just kind of feel like I'm going to have better things to do with my gold and my cards, other places to go with that. You know, it's sort of got some melee application, but even then, like, it's not helping me a lot, even though it slows my opponents down a little bit. It's only when that character is participating, so I think Tokar is honestly pretty bad. I'm going to actually say it's an F right now, with a very, very small chance of going up.
Fair enough. Moving on to some neutrals.
Yeah. Gosh, does that send it to me then with the first of our maesters? This is the unique neutral maester, Archmaester Ebros. He's 5 cost, 3 strength, intrigue, and power icons. He has the maester trait and action. Kneel a maester character to choose and stand another maester character. Limit once per phase. I actually think that's pretty cool. That's versatile. He's going to kind of be the linchpin that pulls and keeps those maester decks running and actually makes them unique and interesting and lets them do something. I was a little worried looking at some of the other stuff that they had neat sounding abilities, but it didn't piece together well enough. But I think Ebros is that linchpin.
Yeah, he'll feed into that Voltron Tokar deck, faux show.
Oh, yeah, boy. If you can make a Targaryen Maester. We're kind of short on those.
Don't think too hard about it, Will. It's going to be great.
Okay, perfect. Sounds good.
Also, his flavor text is hilarious.
Oh, yeah, that's actually pretty good. I like that.
We'll leave that.
Listeners, go look it up.
Yeah, go look it up. It's worth a chuckle.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's not bad. I think he's a B card. Pretty definitively B card.
Really? Man, the thing is, I think he's an E for me, and he is an Edward. The jury is still out to me on whether that Maester engine does anything productive enough to be any good. I can recognize he is the linchpin to that, but I don't know if it's actually going to be worth it to do that. So that's my out.
I'll be bullish on Maesters and assume if you're running Maesters, you're going to rate him at like a B.
Yeah. I mean, Stand can frequently be very good. As yes. We have discovered.
Yes.
All right, I think you're up with the next one.
Oh, it's my nightmare card.
Uh-oh.
It's the Faceless Man. Ryan Jones is... Oh, this one's the overall. Never mind, not my nightmare card. Four gold for 3 strength, no icons, non-unique, ambush 4, And challenges actions, choose a character in a dead pile until the end of the phase. Faceless Man gains each of that character's printed challenge icons, keywords, faction affiliates, and traits. Limit once per phase. So essentially every round you make him into a blank body of whatever dead dude you want. Which seems pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some possibilities I can think of where I want some extra knights or a lord or something to die, or maybe I want a king. Maybe I want extra kings for cards we talked about earlier, or heck, a blood rider or something. I mean, we've talked about the Faceless Man in the past, so I don't know if I want to go too far down that road, but he looks incredibly versatile, and I definitely like that. And tentatively, I like the idea of there being a neutral ambush card like this to add some uncertainty to challenge phases. So,
yep, I agree with that.
So yeah, I think I'm gonna give the Faceless Man an A minus.
I'll go with
yeah. Yeah, he's strong, but I don't think every deck wants it.
Yep, same. If you don't have good keywords, or traits, it's tough to justify.
Yeah. Ideally, I probably want something that gives keywords to certain traits. Like, I don't know, a plot that gives Knights Renown or something.
Yep.
Okay, back to me. Yep. Citadel Novus. This is a 2-cost non-unique Maester. He has an intrigue icon and 1 strength. The Maester trait, of course. And reaction, after Citadel Novus is knelt, reveal the top card of your deck. If it's an attachment or a Maester character, draw it. Limit once per round. Well, I mean, the Novus is obviously who you want to kneel with Ebros to stand somebody else. You know, you're losing a very minimal character to hopefully stand someone that has more impact in actual challenges, and then getting an incremental little benefit of revealing the top card of your deck and maybe getting to draw it. Of course, with some of the other cards like the Agenda, you can potentially stack the top card to make sure you can draw it. So I tentatively like him, but again, it just depends. It's hard to say at the moment, in my mind, how well that whole deck does. And these pieces feel like they need the whole deck.
Yep, but once this idea gets more fleshed out, I mean, he's the key weenie you want. So, I give it a B.
Alright, well...
way to go, weenie.
Yeah, I think I probably just give him a C at the moment. But, que sera, sera. Back to you.
Yeah. The Citadel. So, another Maester card. This one's unique to cost. It has a Citadel and Old Town trait. I'm glad to see the Citadel has a Citadel trait. action. Hey, I wouldn't put it past him. Action, kneel the Citadel to search the top 10 cards of your deck for a Maester character. Reveal it, add it to your hand, and shuffle your deck. So that's good, seeing as people at once upon a time wasted a plot on this ability. Again, assuming you're running a Maester-heavy deck, getting to do it every turn for free is pretty solid.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first one of these in-deck search cards where we don't have to do something first. I mean, you know, there's the plots that you can do just when they're revealed. But this is the first one of these where we can just every turn just kneel it and draw. It's not even kneeling the faction card or anything. You just go for it. I said draw. I meant search. You guys knew what I meant. So, I think that's pretty freaking rad. I don't feel there's enough Maesters yet for me to want to do it, but I think this is going to be one of the really shining stars to get that card advantage going. So I am willing to go ahead and go out on a limb and say that this one is actually going to be quite good in those kind of decks, and maybe even some others that don't go all in. I'm going to give the Citadel a B+.
Yeah, I agree with that. This thing, I think, will really smooth out. I mean, sometimes it's tough with these neutral mechanics if they don't go overboard with giving you cards to flesh out the idea. Something like this can really smooth out you getting the pieces you need. So, yeah, I'm all about it. Same grade.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Okay, so goes back to me already? Gosh. This is the Strangler. 2-cost neutral attachment, condition and poison, terminal. And while attached character is participating in a challenge, set its strength to 1. So other modifiers do not raise or lower its strength. So this character then could not be burnt, no matter how many Plaza of Punishments or Drakaris you have. If it is participating in a challenge and has the Strangler, you cannot lower its strength any further. Conversely, you can't raise it through anything. Horn Hills aside. So this is kind of weird and interesting. I think in the end, though, it's just going to be overshadowed by cheaper stuff. I think if I want to muck with my opponent's characters via an attachment, I'm looking at one drop Milk of the Poppies or Cravens or the like, rather than two drop Stranglers.
Yeah, it's gonna be like the Milk is the card that's going to compare to most often. I think people are usually more afraid of the ability. Like, if you take the ability off a lot of the big guys, they lose a lot of their teeth and they just become this big dumb thing that's clunky but nowhere near the force it had previously been. So I find myself personally usually more afraid of the text box than the strength, but maybe like a defense deck likes this, and you put it on, you know, that Balon or that Tywin that can come over the top, and now they can't. So that's probably the only situation I see where I like this. Is stall or defense? Well, defense,
except the, you know, Cravens or Milk of the Poppy do that same, like, achieve that same goal for you at one cost.
Well, so if
your goal is just one, coming over the top.
Yeah, but Milk at one, you're still left with a, what, 6-strength Tywin and a 5-strength and a whatever strength Balon. Like, they're still, even though they can't do their incredible thing, they're still big. You can, like, keep Balon's text box and make him 1 strength, and no one's afraid of him. Same with Tywin. You can give him +3 from the gold, but if he drops down to 1 and his ability gets shut off...
He's still providing that 2 gold every turn, though.
Yes, he is.
It's not the end of the world for me with the Tywin. I mean, I don't enjoy it, but I know I'm still getting something pretty handy out of that.
Yeah, I think this card in certain applications could be good, but yeah, 9 times out of 10 I'm going to want Milks instead. And those already struggle to make my decks. I find myself cutting them more and more as it is.
Yeah, it's a neat ability. I just honestly don't think it's ever going to see play. To be honest here, I'm going to give it an F.
No,
this is probably the most Fs I've ever given out.
I know, you're really hating on the cards. I think
I just have to be honest with the cards that I just don't expect are going to see play.
I'll give it a D+.
Okay, back to you.
Back to me. We got another event. Words are wind. 0 cost, so that's always good. Non-unique. And when the effects of an opponent's event would initiate, that opponent must choose either A, cancel those effects, or you draw 2 cards. And I don't like this at all.
Yeah, I've seen some folks pretty excited about it online, but historically, these type of choice cards are, as a rule, bad in most card games. There have been a couple in history.
The worst. Whatever's yes. worse for you.
Right, right. There have been a few where they have pumped the power level of the two choices so far that either one is going to be pretty good. But I don't feel like Words or Wind has been pushed that far. If it was like, cancel that event and your opponent discards a card, or you draw three cards, then I'm like, okay, you know, this is a pretty bad choice for my opponent, no matter what they do. But as it is, I feel like it's a trap. It looks tempting, but isn't quite good enough.
Yeah, you can eat those two cards. I'm still going to, you know, Tears your Balon, or Die by the Sword, or Put to the Sword your dude, or like whatever. If you're running events, for the most part, they are ideally game-changing moments, for the most part. I mean, there's a couple that let you draw cards and stuff that people run, but most of your events that you're setting up, they are to pivot turns in your favor. And 9 times out of 10, it's like, sure, eat your two cards. I don't care. I'm flipping this game. And
yeah, what do I care whatever you might draw when I know I'm killing your robber with my Put to the Sword?
Yeah, you can draw that now dead dupe all you want, because your big guy's gone. So yeah, that's a toughie to run. Like you said, I think it's a trap. I'd rather just have Haynes Judgments.
Yeah. If your favorite agenda comes back in a pretty similar form, though, I think this might have a spot in that.
Oh, yeah. And
Darkwing Star.
Yeah, Dare to Dream one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, there will be a moment. There will come a time in this card pool where that card makes the cut for me, because I love Cancel, and when I only get one copy of each, that bad boy goes in.
But, yeah, suddenly the barrier to entry is a lot lower, but...
Oh, yeah, right, everyone now, parties Kyle's Kyle Starling's
I think Words or Wind is a D for deceptive. It looks deceptively good.
Agreed.
Okay, back to me with our only agenda in the pack. We've got the Conclave, Citadel and Conclave traits. Look at that. Another one with the name in the trait. Then your deck may include non-loyal Maester characters from any faction. Your deck must include at least 12 Maester characters. Before placing setup cards, place the top 7 cards of your deck face down under this agenda. Reaction: after you win a challenge in which you control a participating Maester character, choose one card under this agenda and switch it with the top card of your deck. And this is what the real hang-up is for me, I think, for the Conclave. I think most of this is gonna hinge on how many non-loyal Maesters we've got available and what exactly they do, much more than that reaction ability. Because let's be honest, it's a crapshoot, whatever those 7 cards may be that you put underneath there. You could put, you know, 3 Rose Roads, you know, 3 Kings Roads, and a Lannisport Moneylender underneath there, which is going to, in many ways, really blow. Or you might put, you know, all of your copies of Tywin. Or it might be, you know, some random mix of stuff, which, hint, is what it'll be most of the time. But there's just literally zero control. Those cards might as well just be on the bottom of my deck. Who knows? Who cares? So yeah, I don't know. I'm not feeling.
Once they go under, you can then look at them. So now you get some filter. I mean, I think there's something that, like, we talk a lot about, oh, it's like, it's kind of nice to filter your hand. This kind of lets you filter it before it's in your hand.
Filter implies a choice, though.
But you can
actually
look at the 7.
Necessitates a choice.
Yeah, but you get to look at 7 cards, and whatever one is ideal for that moment, you can flip on top of your deck. So, I think there's some goodness there. Yep. And that's all I got right now.
You're not willing to go out on a limb with it yet?
I want to. I will build a Maester deck, just I'm going to wait a couple more packs and see what happens. But I have to believe, I mean, you have to run at least 12 Maester cards to use this. So they have to give us quite a few Maesters so that you can legally play the card, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it is possible now, but you're playing some kind of questionable stuff.
Yeah, so I'm gonna dream big and give this a B minus for big dreams on the future.
I don't think I'm that as up on it yet. I don't want to rate too hard on cards we've not seen yet. So. And that I still feel like I'm going to need fairly specific stuff, I should say. I'm willing to go out on a limb with the Citadel, because just searching for virtually any Maester seems pretty good, but I feel like we're going to need some more specifically good ones for the Conclave. So I'm just going to give it a C right now. Maybe even a C-. C-.
Also, I'm sure this is just because of the size of the image I'm looking at, but I find the what seem to be googly eyes on the upside down bird in the middle of this art hilarious.
It does look a lot like googly eyes.
No one can ever unsee that. The googly eye bird reigns supreme here on out.
Oh, that's great. I'm in real life, in person. It's a raven holding a scroll in its mouth.
Aww.
Yeah, but I can still see the googly eyes.
All right, my new alt art for this, I'm going to zoom in on the bird, and I'm just going to make it have googly eyes.
No, dude, you just print the exact same Conclave, and you literally glue googly eyes to it.
Yes. Have you seen my googly-eyed Conclave? Be afraid.
I love it.
If the box is out in time, maybe I'll make some for price support for Iowa Worlds.
Good luck.
3D agendas, even newer than foils or partial plastic or any of that. We now have 3D agendas. Dare to dream.
Dare to dream. Okay, so what's up now?
Bunch of plots.
Yeah, I think you've got Besieged.
Besieged. All right, we have and I believe all of these are neutral. So let's go ahead and say that now.
Yeah, there is one Tyrell plot, but we're going to do it with the Tyrell cards.
All right, cool. So we have a 5-6-1-5 plot. Siege and War. So that's good. And at least one character must be declared as a defender in each challenge, if able. So this is really good in either low curve decks or aggro bunch of character decks. The high initiative is nice, so you can go first and you can just pop chump challenges or stealth past their weenies, make them kneel their big guys on defense. I think this is a really good way to leverage. I have a bunch of bodies. How do I win this game? I think this is a good card for doing that. I think this answers a lot of aggro deck questions.
That's interesting, because I look at it and think this looks like some variety of control card. I start looking at it as a kind of pseudo Neo card, you know, and it's in my mind more of a how do I tie up their bodies and slow this down and keep them from doing the things they want to do on offense, particularly if I'm running one of those stall decks. What's throne and chair or whatever, that sort of thing. Like if I can
chamber and chair.
yeah you know, if I can muck with your challenges so that you're not getting, you know, your unopposed or your claim or whatever against me, and I'm kneeling your guys out so they're not attempting to compete with me on dominance, I think that looks pretty pretty tasty. And just throwing this out there again, for melee, this is going to be real weird in melee. But I think lead to some interesting table talk and kind of deal cutting when people try to stop someone else in the lead. Like, oh, hey, you know, if two of us power challenge him, then he's got to kneel out all his, you know, characters and can't attack or something like that, whatever it might be. So I like this plot.
Yeah, this is versatile. It's interesting that you went that way. I just don't think of going first in control very often. Maybe this is a turn where it makes sense. But yeah, good plot. Definitely a plot.
I think it shows there's a lot of room to explore since we both went in different directions with what we kind of thought of here. But if nothing else, I mean, it's got respectable gold and initiative, which I think is pretty sweet. So I think I'm going to give Besieged a B. A B for Besieged.
I'll say A. I think we see a bunch. I think this will be real popular once it comes out.
Okay.
I guess we'll be out when people hear this, but...
Well, yeah.
So go stick it in your decks. Depending on which one you think had the better idea.
Try both of them, though, just to make sure.
Always thorough. Sometimes it's more important to try the ideas you think are bad than it is to try the ideas you think are good.
That is true. Okay, so that sends me to Your King Commands It.
Which is definitely a control plot.
Yeah, yeah. This is a 6 gold, 1 initiative, 1 claim, 5 reserve, edict and noble. It is plot deck limit 1, and each non-king, non-queen character cannot gain power. This is another one that, you know, is kind of slowing down that pace of the game. It looks already, you know, we're 2 plots in, that maybe they're trying to kind of push the envelope in what some of these higher gold plots can do, which I kind of like, to maybe alleviate some reliance on some of these plots that we've just seen all over the place. But again, this is another one that I just look at. I think a lot of these cards were designed with melee in mind this time around. I think there are decks where I'm going to want this in Joust, but I think this is like the new auto-include melee plot very nearly. I don't know. If I'm running a bunch of renowned knights and such, maybe I don't play it, but I think it's going to see a lot of play.
I like it. I think stall decks like it. Defense decks like it. In a weird world where you have a bunch of kings and queens, you like it. And 6 gold is super solid, like you said. And I think there are a lot of powerful plots, I think, in this box. And yeah. I think the more powerful plots we have, the better it is for the game. I know one of the common comments people make about Thrones is the uniqueness of the plot deck and why that's a mechanic we should leverage more than as much as possible. And the more powerful plots you have to choose from, I think the more significant they become as an aspect of the game. So I think this is always good from a game meta health standpoint. I like it.
I agree. And it makes that plot phase choice and the so much more impactful, and it ups the tension as you're waiting for that reveal and seeing what happens. So anything that kind of keeps pushing the plot game up there, I really like. All right. Did we get that ratings? I don't know.
I'll give that a B. I think that's a good B card.
I think I'm torn. I think it sees less play in Joust than it does in Melee. I think maybe just split the difference at C+, drop it down to the full letter grade or up to the next letter grade, depending on which format you're in.
Hey, if we ever get like a super popular hyper rush deck, that's probably the first plot I'm grabbing as a shut down. No, you don't. No, Valor turn three and ruin your day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think it's a very good and efficient slow down plot. That in certain metas will be highly necessary. On to the number one reason I want this box to be legal for Iowa Worlds. The Spider's Web. A 3 gold, 5 initiative, 1 claim, 4 reserve scheme. And written correctly to play nicely with my favorite agenda, we have reaction. After a claim is applied for an intrigue challenge you won, you may initiate an additional intrigue challenge this phase. And until the end of the phase, raise the claim value on your revealed plot card by 1 during intrigue challenge. Limit once per phase. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So win that first one, flip into this, do another one for 2 claim. That's brutal. Sell out, win by 5, and come with like claim raising Cersei, take 3 more cards out of their hand. Ugh, dirty.
I don't know. With the extra challenges, I'm maybe still looking at the 7-cost Cersei, but either way, this is super potent. It's interesting that you mentioned that it's written to work well with Reigns of Castamere, because it's actually got something else down here at the end that I think was also foresight with Reigns. It's got that low 4 reserve, which I think was definitely something that they were thinking about sticking people with that are getting sneaky, dropping this in via the agenda, because several of the other plots that people do that type of thing with, some of them even actually improve that kind of situation. So it's nice to see it planned around a little bit to use this as a balancing factor with that agenda.
Yeah. But I think it's really good. I don't know if I run it in anything other than Reigns right now, just because like, the 4 and 3/5/1 is not good. But this is an auto include, I think, in almost every schemes deck. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is actually a really good plot. I think I'm willing to give this one an A.
Yep. Big A, faux show.
Okay. And now it comes to war. This is a 3 gold, 3 initiative, 1 claim. 4 reserve again. Oof. War trait and forced interrupt. When claim is applied for an intrigue or power challenge, the attacking player may choose to apply military claim instead. Oof. This is another one that's going to be wild in melee, I think, to potentially just beat the snot out of particular players, which could be a problem. I don't like when things gang up too much and effectively blow someone out of a game. I think that's usually a poor way to play if you for sure want to win. But it does tend to happen either from inexperienced people or people who specifically enjoy just kicking someone while they're down. And that is their goal. Hello, Chella. In Joust, though, I think where you can really kind of anticipate more and weave your web, so to speak, I think this is going to be pretty good. I wish it had a little higher gold to make me play it, but that is one strong ability.
Yeah, this is a plot you definitely have to put a lot of thought into. I mean, it's like Red Wedding level,
yeah,
muck up kind of stuff. But I think there's tons of situations, like you said, where if you plan properly, you can leverage this and really crush an opponent on that turn. I think Greyjoy with a lot of saves, I think, says, you know, come at me, I don't really care, because I'm going to wipe 3 of your dudes off the board.
Yeah.
It's tough, because with 3 initiative, you're going to go second a lot. And so having to take their challenges and maneuver those is tough. Now, there are lots of ways to combat that. You look at ambush. You look at this as maybe anti-Valor tech. If Valor tends to wreck your face, this, and you can time that out real well, this, I mean, could be a huge thing to throw back on them, because their claim is still zero, so it doesn't matter what they change it to.
Right, right.
And lets you, let's say they have like a save out and they're like, oh, I'm gonna Valor and leverage, keeping my two big dudes and none of theirs. And this now gives you a situation where you can apply a ton of pressure back at them, but again, only 3 gold. So the plot, I think, is well balanced, but that effect is wild and definitely can define some games, both Joust and Melee. So I'm gonna give it like a B+.
Ooh,
but
nice.
It's definitely a ballsy plot to run.
Yeah, I think it's gonna need some specific homes, especially with that low reserve. But I do like it. I think I'm probably just gonna give it a C. I think a lot of folks are gonna pick something that's a bit more certain. But I think it's pretty good.
I bet you this isn't a plot deck that wins a major tournament next season. Because I think it's the kind of thing that if you can leverage right, can slam home a lot of games.
I can get behind that. Okay, we are on the home stretch. We've got 2 cards left. Why don't you take the next one?
All right, we got Trade Routes. Happy time. It's a kingdom and summer. 2 gold, 2 initiative, 1 claim, 6 reserve. And when revealed, choose an opponent. Gain 1 gold for each location you control and each location that opponent controls. This seems like a really solid, really happy... like that. Like, I find myself usually running 2 econ plots and not a lot of decks, but in some decks these days. And one is usually like that late game surge or like mid to late game surge. And this may become my new favorite one because it has no drawbacks. You have some control over making sure it works because, I mean, you can play some locations knowing you run this. It's not completely opponent dependent. And I can see that number getting really big in a lot of popular matchups these days.
I agree. Gosh, I don't know. It is nice that it counts both, but I can't help but wonder if in most situations I think I would just rather have calling the banners. You know, the better initiative, a little better base gold. Yes, I'm only counting my opponent's stuff, but you know what? To really be better in most cases, my opponent and I both probably need to already have 3 locations on the board, which means Trade Routes is a little later in the game. Generally, if I have those locations, I need that income boost less. Plus it's another summer plot that just boosts income, which is getting really boring to me. So I think I'm actually kind of down on Trade Routes. I think it's good, but not as good as people think it is. Plus, of course, still a kingdom. Always have to keep in the back of my mind those games where I've just cried thanks to naval superiority. So I think Trade Routes is good, but not the end-all be-all folks think. So I'm going to give it probably a B.
I don't know. This is definitely an A. This is most commonly it's going to be like plot 4, 8216, and I really like that a lot. Something post-Valor, post-Wildfire, post-Ferris. And with so many stall decks, like all that Martel, Bera, Night's Watch BS that has a bajillion locations. I mean, I could see them running it as well, but it's like, okay, that's cool. I'm going to count 10 gold now and lay out my hand. And sure, you have weenies, but Tywin and Jamie are still going to push this through whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
I really dig it. I think it's going to become my new, like I said, my new second econ plot in a deck that needs an opener, a high econ opener, and then a high econ mid to late game. I think this is a phenomenal, if not the best, mid to late game econ plot in the game right now.
Okay.
Probably running it over trading. It's probably the new, like, mid game.
If you specifically want it mid game, I can definitely see that. I just like that trading does give you the option of being early game, depending on, you know, your situation and your deck. And I just really don't think Trade Roots is worth it for that. It's only that mid to late game.
Yeah, it has to be your second econ plot, but I think it's phenomenal as your second econ plot. So yeah, A.
Okay, well, I guess we'll see if the listeners think I'm underrating plots these days now, too. Well, last card. We are on to Nothing Burns Like the Cold. This is a 4 gold, 7 initiative, 1 claim, and 5 reserve. It is plot deck limit 1. Has the winter trait, and when revealed, each player chooses an attachment and a non-limited location he or she controls if able, and discards each of those cards from play. Cannot be saved. So here we are again, where the winter plots are just fact way more interesting than the summer plots. This is kind of like a marched to the wall for locations and attachments simultaneously, which I think is very interesting. It's not as good at attachment removal as something like confiscation, like I've seen a lot of folks making comparisons to. But the double whammy there, I think I'm much more likely to hit my opponent flat-footed on a location, you know, when they've dropped a couple limited income locations and then their Plaza of Pride or something. And then I'm like, oh, well, next turn, say goodbye to your Plaza. Which really makes me like this. It's going to be kind of timing dependent, but I think this is going to be quite good.
Yeah, just make sure you don't run attachments or non-limited locations, and, I mean, that's a 2-for-nothing.
I mean, and there are decks that can do that, you know? There very much are.
Or even if you run low attachments, just make sure yours isn't out there at the time when you drop this.
Right.
Like, I'm going to hold off a round and then do this. So, yeah, this is good. I think this is a B-plus kind of plot. 4 golds. The stats are very nice for a winner.
Yeah, very nice. And just in general, I like to see that high initiative. It's felt lately like the initiative in our plots has really kind of constricted from what it was in the early days of the second edition. It's felt lately like our plot initiative has really shrunk down to mostly being like, you know, 1 through 4. Minus a couple outliers at either end of that spectrum. So it's nice to see some more playable stuff at the 5-plus range of initiative. So, yeah. I mean, this is going to be very playable. I think B-plus is a very reasonable spot to put it. A lot of decks are going to want this.
Yeah, I can see this for sure. It's solid. And choke, super good.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's just, well,
I mean, it doesn't hit limited stuff, which is going to be the income stuff.
I mean, still hitting 2 cards, is always solid.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can definitely,
especially something that's normally recursible, like an attachment that's going to get played over and over again, being able to take it out of the game is solid.
Right. And you can definitely plan your own deck around it. So it, and when you play it, to really minimize its ability to touch you. Arguably even easier than you can minimize March to the Wall. So I think that is going to be a big mark in its favor.
Yep.
Okay.
We did it.
Woo! We did it. We'll let someone else deal with the other half, all the Tyrell cards.
Yeah, I don't want nothing to do with that.
Yep. Props and slops?
I say that, then I'll probably be on next episode.
Yeah, yeah, almost certainly.
Just when you think you're out, they reel you back in, Will. They reel you back in. Yeah, props and slops.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's see. I'm going to throw out a prop too. Something Wicked This Way Comes. I am reading that here this Halloween season for the first time ever. Felt like a little kind of spooky reading, and I'm digging it. So there's some Bradbury for you. His writing is a little different. It's honestly, I know this is going to give some people a heart attack. The first Bradbury I've actually read. So I'm finally getting in on some of those classic sci-fi authors.
I'm going to prop fall being here, and not for the pumpkin spice. I just enjoy getting to wear hoodies and not being judged, and leaf changes. So take that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's fall yet down where you are, Will, but up here in Iowa, it is definitely fall.
I thought it was already winter for you guys by now.
No, not quite. No frost tonight, so we're not there
yet. Oh, okay. That's good. It's been okay down here. We've dipped into the 50s and 60s for highs, though I've heard there's a rumor, a possibility of snow next weekend down here, so...
Whoa.
Madness can happen.
Yeah. I'll say props to Irish Car Bombs. We continue to collect supplies for Iowa Worlds, and so the Guinness and the Jameson and some local Iowa-made cream liqueur is making its way here for Drinks Within Drinks, a staple at any event involving Matthew Lay. So bring your chugging skills to Iowa, because you will need them, because that'll happen due to peer pressure, for sure.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna throw out some food or some props to some alcohol, and that is going to be to Winter Grind. My favorite Mother's Brew is unleashed upon the world once again for this year, so I'm always a fan of that.
Always tasty. Mm-hmm. What else is new and good these days? It's been a pretty uneventful week. Work is ramping up, so I guess slops to that. But also, whenever the weather gets cold like this, I find myself desperate for a nap in the afternoons that never comes. But props to the nap I will one day get.
You know, I can sometimes feel that. I'm not normally a nap guy, but every once in a while.
Something about it being warmer in my house than it is outside.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, I think my final... Oh, go ahead.
All of our orders are in for Iowa Worlds now, which is exciting. That was my big nightmare, is that I would have some kind of logistical flub up. So all the shirts are ordered, all the playmats are ordered, all the alt art cards are ordered, the trophy base and trophy are ordered, the food is starting to come in. I'm trying to think what I'm missing. I am desperate. We have not had someone who has claimed the title of the great host since Professor AJ in the CCG days before there was a chapter pack. And I am desperate to anoint myself. So the tires keep spinning, and I keep spending more of our money than my wife is comfortable with to make this happen. And a lot of booze, let's not forget. A lot of booze. The people at Sam's Club looked at me very shiftily with the number of handles and wine bottles and beers that were in my cart. but it's going to be good. So, still not too late to sign up. Just bring a sleeping bag and message me or RSVP on the website and show up, because it's going to be the best. And Will be there, and I'll be there, so you can meet us, or re-meet us, and tell us what a great and or terrible job
we did. Woo! Hopefully it won't be the terrible job. Otherwise, that's going to put us in
the danger zone.
This definitely closes this chapter of the White Book.